Hi guys, and welcome back to Tales from Wisteria Lane, the podcast where we give you a fair view of all things Desperate Housewives. I'm Joel.
I'm Billy Ray.
And today we will be discussing Season 6, Episode 15, Lovely.
Lovely.
Lovely. Now, a quick disclaimer, I am not very well today, so if I sound monotonous, then that is why. Unfortunately, I will also be doing the overview of the episode, so it's probably mostly me talking, and B will be giving us the trivia. So do you have anything to start us off with?
Yeah, I've got some factoids. So this was written by David Schladweiler and directed by David Warren, the Davids, and it first aired on the 21st of February 2010. So there was quite a gap between this one and the last one, but there was no reason given in the trivia or anything. So on this week, the number one song in the US was Still TikTok by Kesha, and the number one in the UK was Everybody Hurts by Help in Haiti. So in an attempt to raise money for the victims of the 2010 Haiti earthquake that killed up to 200,000 people, the Prime Minister at the time, Gordon Brown, rang Simon Cowell to ask him to arrange a charity single. So Cowell chose the REM 1992 single Everybody Hurts, and you should all know that song, I'm sure you do.
Everybody hurts.
But if you don't, there you go. The cover version was tastily put together by Cowell, who gathered 21 artists to record the song, and the performers are as follows: Leona Lewis,
obviously,
Rod Stewart, Mariah Carey, Cheryl Cole, Mika, Michael Bublé, Joe McKeldry, Miley Cyrus, James Blunt, Gary Barlow and Mike Owen of Take That, John Bon Jovi, James Morrison, Alexandra Burke, Susan Boyle, Aston Merigold and Marvin Humes of JLS, Shane Fillon and Mark Freehley of Westlife, Kylie Minogue herself, the queen, the legend, the icon,
the star,
and Robbie Williams.
Really was a product of its time, wasn't it? I don't even remember this song.
Nor do I. I also love that Robbie's obviously gone solo at this point because he's not in the Of Take That.
Of Take That, so, yeah, I know.
Soloist Robbie Williams here, guys.
I mean, this relates to last week's trivia that I had of where Susan Boyle was finished filming it and then she went home and found somebody in her house.
I mean, Simon Cowell, so obviously we have a lot of X Factor people here, and like
Joe McKeldry, people
from his TV shows, JLS, Joe McKeldry, Leona Lewis. The song sold 453,000 copies in its first week on the UK singles chart for the week ending February the 20th, 2010. It was the first track to sell in six figures during February since Hero by Enrique Iglesias 8 years previously in 2002, and the song was the first one penned by REM to top the UK singles chart. Which is actually kind of sad because it's not even their version.
It's not even their version, and their version's great. And so Shiny Happy People. Shiny Happy People's fantastic REM song.
Yeah, sorry REM that this was the first.
The disrespect to REM.
So on Monday the 15th of February 2010, the album The Family Jewels by Marina and the Diamonds was released.
Brilliant album.
The single Blame It on the Girls by Mika was released. Do you remember that song?
No. I was never really a fan of Mika.
I liked some of his songs. I've never listened to an album.
No.
And on Friday the 19th of February, the single Rude Boy by Rihanna was released.
Oh, God.
And on Saturday the 20th of February, 2010, so on the Portuguese Atlantic island of Madeira, heavy rain caused floods and mudslides, leaving at least 37 dead.
Oh, God.
So there wasn't a great deal that happened except for that Saturday. But I do like to look at sort of like album and film releases, but I couldn't find any film releases of note either, to be honest.
No, fair.
The title of the episode comes from a song of the same name taken from the Stephen Sondheim musical A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum. And lastly, this is the fifth of seven special segmented episodes of the series, so we've still got a couple more after this. And by special segmented episodes, I do mean the episode is split into segments, I'm assuming, for like individual characters at a time.
Yeah, like we had with the Edie episode when she died and the girls were dropping off the ashes to the sun.
That awful
and
the episode handyman with the episode, handyman,
which I love.
Awful. Eli Scruggs.
yeah. So I can't remember any of the others. Can't think of any others though.
Nor can I. And there's still a couple more to come apparently.
Yeah, and I can't think of what they would be either. But we'll get there. No, anything else?
Nope.
Okay. So previously on Desperate Housewives, the ladies welcomed Catherine back into the fold. Bree and Orson began working on fixing their marriage. Gabby and Carlos overheard Angie and Nick arguing and now suspect them, although they aren't really sure what they suspect them of. Mm. And Susan invited Robin to live with her and Mike while she sort of found her feet.
Yeah.
And so we open the episode with Robin walking down Wisteria Lane and Mary Alice commenting about how everyone stared at her because she's a hot piece of ass. Mm. And it turns out she is walking towards Gabby's place because they're hosting a welcome back to the lane party for Catherine. From the get-go, Robin already attracts all of the attention. from the beginning, it's pervy old Roy. He's there immediately interested in her. And then from there, all the rest of the husbands start to sort of filter through as they all start to see Robin.
Yes, they do.
So the husbands were originally talking to Catherine until they see Robin, and then they kind of make their escape to go flirt with her. So Catherine isn't even the centre of attention at her own party.
Not the last time it will happen to Catherine either.
No, it really won't. Tom is really cringe with his flirting. Roy is persistent. Carlos is rich and braggy. And Austin's just kind of patronising. I like that all of the husbands have their own sort of way of flirting. Each one of them as cringy as the last.
Yeah, the ladies pick up on this too. And yeah. We obviously pick up on it because it's really obvious, especially with Austin, who's meant to be this highbrow man of culture and arts. And he's like, wow, so interesting. Tell me more about how you...
She said something about how she's never, like, oh, she's like, oh, this place is so suburban. I've never been anywhere where the ceilings are this tall. Wow. And then Austin's like, fascinating, just fascinating. Ew.
The ladies pick up on it. I loved when Lynette goes, oh, God.
Tom's is the cringiest one. That's why. Because, like, they introduce themselves, or Susan introduces the husbands, and then Tom kind of leans in and he's like, I hope you got all that, because there'll be a quiz later. And I'm like, ew.
He really is. Tom's on a bit of a downward spiral this season, isn't he?
He really is. It was disgusting. And then Robin announces that she'll be moving in with Susan for a while, which the men love, but the ladies not so much. And it kind of doesn't take everyone long to find out that Robin used to be a stripper.
Yeah.
So the ladies then move into the kitchen to be judgy about Robin behind her back and berating Susan for allowing a stripper to move onto the lane, because apparently it's Susan and Robin's fault that their husbands can't control themselves.
Apparently. But at least Catherine's level-headed about it. Probably the person that you'd expect the least, but yeah. She is. Catherine's like, what's the problem? She's got that vibe of, and what?
Yeah.
You know?
And Bree's the same, to be fair. Mm. It's Gabby and Lynette that are the judgmental ones.
Yeah, Lynette says she's trouble, and that just came out of nowhere. Yeah. She even says, the last thing I need next door is a stripper, even though she isn't a stripper anymore, nor is she a thing.
No. But so Catherine tells the ladies that she seems nice and tries to instill in the ladies the mentality of giving her a chance.
In a very funny Catherine kind of way.
Yeah, Catherine's even like, well, she can't bring any more crazy to the lane than I did. From this point on, the episode is then fairly linear, with each housewife getting their own story, which is labelled individual housewife and the stripper.
Even though she's not a stripper anymore.
No, I know. So, Parker's friends are meeting him at his house to go to school, and Lynette answers the door and all the kids run upstairs, all the pervy boys. Mm-hmm. Tom is then really shitty and gives Lynette shit for not finishing the laundry, which Lynette takes the bait on, and Bea was watching this the other day, and I'd already seen the episode and taken the notes, so I knew it was coming, so I was specifically watching Bea's reaction to what Tom said. And watching Bea's jaw drop at the audacity of Tom saying, well, you started it, shouldn't you finish it?
Yeah, you know those moments where you're like, oh.
So Lynette does take the bait, and she kind of picks up the pile of laundry and throws it on Tom, and that's when she finds that a ring was hidden under the pile. Apparently it's Tom and Lynette's anniversary. So the ring kind of makes up for Tom's shittiness, because obviously he was doing it deliberately.
Why'd you have to use being a horrible person as a way to hide a surprise?
I'm a very stubborn person, so if B tried this with me, I don't think I'd find it very easy to flip from being ridiculously annoyed to completely overwhelmed with romance. Yeah. I would still be incredibly annoyed and be like, well, what the fuck is that? So Tom has bought Lynette a beautiful, expensive antique ring, and Lynette's present for Tom is apparently sex. But he can't wait until tonight and wants the kids piss off to school. And that's when Lynette notices that Parker and his friends still haven't come downstairs and are very quiet. So she kind of sneaks upstairs and walks into his room and sees the boys at the window, and then they all run off. And then Lynette goes to the window and notices the boys have been spying on Robin in the shower.
So they're being peeping Toms.
Yeah. And so as a parent, Lynette needs to now take this opportunity to instill in Parker what he was actually doing and help him realise that, no, that was ridiculously inappropriate.
Yeah. So you politely ask the neighbour, maybe put up a blind, close a curtain.
Yeah.
I'll have a word with my son about being a peeping creep and how that's not respectful of anyone.
Yeah.
And we'll go on from there. So hopefully she does that.
But instead of doing that, Lynette goes over and berates Robin for taking a shower.
Yeah, she's really rude to Robin.
Really rude. And yes, like B said, Robin probably could have closed the curtains, because in America you just don't seem to have the frosted windows.
Also, it's a bit weird, the placement of the shower in this house.
Yeah. So Robin tries to make a bit of a joke about it, but Lynette gives her grief about being a responsible person and this being a nice community and stop corrupting innocent children.
Right, gatekeeping this nice community.
Right. And then this is when Robin drops the bomb and tells Lynette that her son Parker isn't as innocent as she thinks he is, as he tried to pay her for sex.
Yeah, I don't even know what to say to that.
Lynette's quite shocked at this revelation because she's like, oh my god, Parker's the good one. Parker's not one of the twins. Later on, Parker comes home from school to find Tom and Lynette in the kitchen waiting for him, and they want to have a little bit of a chat, girl to girl.
Yeah.
And so we have a clip.
We hoped it would be another year before we have the parent-son conversation where we tell you not to offer your neighbor money for sex.
Oh, crap, she told?
Yeah. You might want to pick a more discreet stripper next time.
What were you thinking? We raised you better than that, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
We did. So, what do you have to say for yourself?
I just really, really, really needed to have sex.
Three reallys. Well, in that case, here's a 20. Go back and try again.
Terrible parenting. A 20. A 20. Do you really think Robin looks that cheap?
You think that's the problem?
Yes, that is the problem.
Yeah, also, ex-stripper.
Well, yeah.
Not a stripper anymore, Tom.
No.
Let's all stop calling her the stripper.
I know, this really starts to get on my nerves in this. So, it all sort of comes out that Parker's friends are telling him that they've all had sex, and so now he feels like he's the only one in the friendship group that hasn't had sex. But Lynette kind of likes to point out to Parker that his nerdy friends aren't really getting any.
Yeah, as Avril Lavigne once said, boys lie.
Boys do lie. But girls lie too.
Yeah, that was a very good point she made, though. She's like, they're not getting it. And don't you just wish that you could go back to your past self or anyone in your school and just be like, everyone is not having sex.
Yeah.
Like, some people might be. Some people are lying.
Most people are lying.
Most people are lying.
Most people are lying.
I did it.
What, and claiming that you were having sex?
I lied and said that I'd had sex before when I was younger.
Really?
Yeah. Peer pressure, innit? It's one of those things that I just wish I could go back to my past self with my current knowledge and be like, people lie about everything. Don't believe everything that these idiots are saying.
Mm. Parker doesn't believe that women look at him that way. So Tom tags in to tell him that he's great. And in a few years, he'll sort of notice the shift. And then Parker apologizes and goes upstairs. And then this is when Tom tells Lynette that guys always pay for sex in some way, implying that the ring that he got for her for their anniversary was payment in and of itself. And then Lynette clearly doesn't take this very well and tells them that sex is off the table for tonight, but she's keeping the ring.
Before we move on to, well, not move on, before we address what Tom has said, I just want to revert back to the parenting that's happened in this scene, because I didn't think it was very good.
Really?
I thought him saying, you know, you'll grow into your looks, you know, that implication, it'll come eventually, like, that was fine, but there wasn't really any talk of, we don't spy on people through their windows.
No, that's true.
We have urges, but you don't have to act on them. Don't be a creep. You need to respect women. None of this was mentioned. He just says, don't worry, you'll get laid eventually. And then, like, off you pop.
Yeah, well, I guess finding out that their 16-year-old son tried to pay for sex kind of overrode the peeping Tom 16-year-old in their mind. And then their priority was, we need to stop our son from trying to pay for sex. It's illegal.
Yeah, true. And now back to the current issue. I'm not sure why Tom was stupid enough to come up with, there's always a transaction with sex talk. What was he thinking?
I don't know. He's got such a cynical mentality about it.
But it's also just a severe misunderstanding of the human sex drive in everyone.
Yeah.
Well, not everyone, but people in general. Most, like a lot of people. It's a severe misunderstanding.
Yeah.
And it's come about due to misconceptions and patriarchal views and sexism and stuff, but come on, Tom. Like, we as adult men know that women want to have sex.
Oh god, yes.
Women have sex drives, Tom.
Women, yeah, that's true. Yeah, I wasn't quite getting where you were coming from nowadays. Yeah, women, no, of course women want to have sex. Of course women want to have sex. Sex isn't like this magical thing that women give to the men when men have been good.
It really worries me the way he speaks sometimes, and I just think, Lynette, I don't know if
Tom is for you.
I don't know if we can keep him. Because not this far into a relationship. You've had this many kids with him. You've had this many life experiences. And he's still coming out with this kind of bollocks.
Yeah, he says something later on as well, which we'll get to shortly, that really bothers me.
Alarming.
Later that night, Tom tries again, but Lynette still isn't having it and wants an apology. But Tom believes what he said is true, claiming that Lynette didn't give him anything until he finally paid for sort of like an expensive meal or something. And that's when she put out as he so politely phrased it. But apparently Tom is an idiot because Lynette didn't care about the dinner. It was because Tom did something romantic and that's why she banged him. And apparently he brought a light bulb into her apartment building because the one just outside her apartment had burnt out and she didn't live in the best neighborhood. And yeah. Very, very sweet, very romantic story. And Tom, in his 40 plus years of life, has only now realized that showing a woman that you care is what she wants more than anything.
Yeah. You know what? Maybe she just wanted to have sex with you.
Yeah.
As well.
But like the fact that Lynette says this story and then Tom's like, that's all it takes? Me showing you I care? And I'm like, are you kidding me? How long have you been married? And only now are you realizing, oh, okay, maybe I should show my wife that I care and then we can have sex.
But also a little bit of further education that was left out. Sex is not transactional. So mm-mm. Don't think you can just do nice things and you'll get laid.
Oh no.
After this conversation as well.
And that was what I was literally going to say next. Like the next concern now is you have to make sure that Tom isn't just doing things to show he cares with the hope of then getting sex or with the intention of expecting sex from it, because that therefore nullifies the caringness of the action.
Because that's kind of what I'm getting from his mentality at the end.
Yeah, me too.
Where he's like, that's all it takes. It's like, no, that's not what it takes. You should just be like that.
Yeah.
People want to have sex with nice people that they love. They yeah. love and they like.
Yeah. If people want to have sex at all.
If people want to have sex with at all. If people want to have sex with you at all.
Anyway, so moving on. Then they do it. Tom and Lynette do end up having sex. She gives him sex in the end. And then the next morning, Lynette comes over to Robin to apologise for being a judgy bitch, leaving Lynette with a lesson learnt.
Yes. And I'm glad that she apologises.
Me too.
And she uses the word bitch herself. About herself.
She does.
And she owns up to that bitchiness.
Yeah.
You can always count on Lynette to do that though. She apologizes very often.
Yeah.
Even if she doesn't put her hand to her chest in this scene.
Oh, she doesn't, does she? She doesn't do the classic Lynette. And there was the moment as well, because Robin was like, no, I get it. Like an ex-stripper moving in next door would freak some people out. And then Lynette goes, no, seriously, I'm sorry. And that could have been the moment where she puts her hand to her heart. So Bree is helping Orson into bed and discussing her plans for tomorrow, and Orson has his plans as well, and then they awkwardly say goodnight, not really sure how to be with each other currently, and you know, they're trying to navigate fixing a broken marriage and so on, so it's all just a bit awkward at the moment.
It's nice that she's set a bed up for him downstairs though, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And she's given him a little bell, so if he needs anything, he can just ring his bell.
Yeah, she states that she's got stuff to do, but she can go to the store for him if needed. It's all very nice there. Yeah. They're beginning to rekindle the relationship.
Yeah, they seem to be sort of on a bridge over troubled water now.
Mm.
The next morning, Robin comes in to see Bree to ask her for help baking a cake. Bree offers up her equipment and ingredients, but Robin doesn't even know where to begin, which is a real mood, I must say.
First we mix the dry goods and such.
The flour and such.
I do like, though, that she says the secret to baking it is precision. And guys, as someone that cooks every day, that is so true, because I cook. Cooking's an art, but baking's a science, as they say.
Yeah.
Baking and cooking are quite different.
And to be fair, I say it's a mood. I can bake better than I can cook. I'm not like a fantastic baker. You won't see me on Great British Bake Off or anything, but I used to bake a lot. I can bake better than I can cook. I can't cook for shit. So in the end, it looks like Bree is helping Robin make a cake, to which Robin then hugs her and tells Bree she rocks.
Yeah.
And I rock.
I rock. So in the previous scene, Bree stated about how busy she was, but that she could run errands in the morning. Mm. Where did she find time to make a cake?
I don't know, because she did say she was prepping for a bar mitzvah.
And look at that cake. That took some real effort to do the finishings and
the finishing touches. Yeah, it wasn't even just like your average Victoria sponge.
Are you making an average Victoria sponge now?
It was like a proper cake. So she was supposed to be in the test kitchen in the morning. She was preparing for an event that she was going to be catering in the afternoon.
Mm.
But how she managed to prepare for that and randomly bake a cake, I will never know.
Right.
So some time passes and Bree's cake looks lovely, gal. And now her and Robin are just chatting about Orson and the problems in their marriage. Robin gives Bree some tips on men and sex, as Bree is worried they've lost their intimacy and isn't really sure if Orson can do or wants to do that sort of stuff with her. However, Robin helps Bree to realise that even in a wheelchair, Orson can still touch, see, feel.
Like, yeah, basically he has all his senses still.
Yeah.
Even if his legs don't work.
And I get Bree's probably like, I don't even know if he can do any of that anymore. Like, where's the cutoff to paralysation?
True. But right. He's a man. He has man brain.
He does have man brain.
He's still going to be able to do some stuff.
Yeah. So later that day, Bree comes home to find Orson reading and listening to music. Bree takes this moment to try and be intimate with Orson, starting with a striptease. Like an odd little dance that she's trying to do.
She's got the shoulders.
She's got the shoulders down.
Don't you want to do that upstairs near the hamper?
It's
So Susan's kind of got one up on Bree in this particular skill then.
She definitely does.
But don't worry, Bree, it's your first time.
Yeah.
Learning curve.
Needless to say, it doesn't work as Bree intended, leaving Orson confused as to what the hell that was.
Yeah, that was a lap dance?
So he tells Bree that after his accident, he didn't think she would ever consider being with him in that way. But Bree does tell him that it may be awkward at first, but they can work on it.
Yeah, I do like how sassy and funny Orson is all of a sudden all over again.
Oh, the best line was when he was like, well, if you're having a stroke, we'll make quite the power couple.
Don't you want to do that upstairs closer to the hamper? Yeah.
So that's Bree and Robin's story together. Robin helps Bree learn to see Orson as just your average man again.
She helps them rekindle their intimacy.
Yes. Anna is on the phone to Danny with Carlos and Gabby in the dining room discussing what they may or may not have overheard Nick and Angie arguing about and discussing why they may be on the run and how they still have money. All very random conversation.
Yeah.
Carlos wants to make Anna break up with her, but Gabby said that that won't work.
They need to break up with him.
Oh, yeah. Well, so Carlos wants to make Anna break up with him, but Gabby said that won't work because we need a carrot, not a stick.
It's true. You can't just tell a girl to break up with someone parent.
That's not going
to
do anything. It's just going to drive her into his arms.
Yeah, as Gabby rightly says, as she is a girl.
Yeah. So later on, Gabby runs upstairs to give Anna some news that her old friend Luke wants to sign Anna to his modeling agency and they want her in New York immediately. Anna isn't sure, however, as she agreed that her and Danny would swan off to New York together after high school. So she's saying no to this golden opportunity that Gabby has given her.
Which is actually quite sensible.
Very sensible.
The way she's like, not until I graduate. That's the plan.
It's a real change with Anna.
I'd be quite proud of that.
Me too. Like, oh God. 5, 6, 7 episodes ago, Anna would have just said, yeah, ship me off, I'll go. I'll do whatever it takes. Now, Danny seems to have helped ground her.
And Gabby.
Yeah.
Like, Gabby and Carlos's relationship with her over the last...
I think having a familial presence,
yeah,
like a consistently familial presence around for her has really helped her to kind of understand why it might be more important to stay in one place and jump at the first opportunity you get.
Yeah, she definitely makes better decisions now.
Mm. So at this news, Gabby runs off to Susan's to drink wine and bitch about her selfish niece's choice of love over career. However, Robin comes to give her insight on the situation, telling the ladies that she passed up on a career for a boy and it all went tits up when she no longer had the boy and then she lost her opportunity. And we have a bit of a clip.
That is fantastic. Did we just hear the same story?
You have got to tell that story to Anna. Putting off your dreams and then having your life spiral down the crapper? It couldn't be more perfect.
Well, I mean, I guess I could talk to Anna if you think it would help her.
Great. And don't be afraid to turn on the waterworks. Nothing sells pathetic like stripper tears.
Maybe it would help if I started taping you so you could hear what it is you say.
I was thinking the same thing as Susan in that moment.
Yeah. And it sounds like Robin had a really sad story.
It's very random. It's all very random coincidental things.
It is.
It works for Gabby's purposes.
Yeah. So this chat with Robin obviously worked and Gabby and Anna are now coming home with shopping, I'm guessing, or like suitcases. And Gabby is giving her modelling tips. Danny then comes over, so Anna takes this moment to tell him whilst Gabby is watching from the window inside. Danny is upset that she can't wait, but Anna sees this as an amazing opportunity and doesn't think they should be together if he can't support her.
Yeah, so quite the change.
Yes.
From the previous decision that Anna had made.
Yeah, well, I guess that chat with Robin really worked.
I guess so.
Gabby sees Robin run past and stops her to thank her for helping get Anna to New York and breaking up with Danny. This doesn't really sit well with Robin, who doesn't like being used, as Gabby didn't give her the full story. But either way, Gabby is pleased and believes she owes Robin one, and Anna is now in New York. Like, that happened very quickly in the space of literally a few scenes.
Yeah, but you know what? Good for Robin to just own up to that and just say, I don't like being used.
Yeah, I liked that. The fact that she was just like, why were they arguing? You didn't tell me the full story.
Yeah, you didn't tell me the story. You used me. She used her.
Yeah. So with this news, Robin then goes over to the Bolands to speak to Danny. And then Gabby and Carlos cheers to their success when outside we see Danny getting into a taxi and... That kind of ends Gabby's story with Robin. And Gabby doesn't really seem to learn anything.
No, but it's not really about Gabby. It's about Robin.
Yeah.
I think it's just showing that Robin can own up to she can call someone out in an awkward situation. Like, she's quite spunky, as the Americans would say. But yeah, not a great episode for Gabby and Carlos.
No, it's really not.
But also, I'm assuming at the end that after Robin spoke to Danny, he had a phone call with Anna and maybe now they're moving in together and to stick it to the man.
We'll
stick
find
it to Gabby and Carlos, I guess.
We'll find out.
But also, just That was a very boring story.
It was. In the grand scheme of things, I do think that Gabby's and Carlos's story is the worst.
It really is. Like, even as we were just doing it, I was looking at my notes, and I thought, I don't really have very much to say.
No. Moving on to Susan, Mike comes home after a long day at work with a bad back, which Robin claims she can fix because all the girls at Double D's were constantly throwing their backs. It works, and she helped Mike's pain, and they thank her, and Robin gives Mike a hug, which, judging by Susan's face, she isn't really happy with, but she doesn't say anything.
Yeah, I mean, I think I need Robin in my life to sort out my back and shoulder problems. That would be wonderful.
You shouldn't be doing this sort of stuff without training.
No, not at all.
I tried to do it with an ex of mine and injured my back trying to help his back. And it still hurts now.
Oh, bless you. Mine's from retail heavy lifting for that years
probably,
and years.
That probably hasn't helped my back either, but yeah, it still hurts now. It's not very good. Don't try this at home unless you are, you know, a chiropractor.
But with Susan, we can assume that it's because of Carl cheating on her in the past. So maybe yeah. She has a problem with seeing her husband being intimate with other women.
Yeah, probably. Probably.
I mean, we had the whole strip club thing as well.
Yeah, there's probably a little bit of sort of like residual Carl about this whole situation, to be fair.
Yeah.
So the next day, Susan comes home to find Robin walking on Mike's back, which apparently he threw out again.
He really needs to get that checked.
He does, if he keeps throwing it out. I mean, he's got a fairly, you know, laborious job, so it's no surprise, but yeah, maybe you should just get a chiropractor. Weirdly, Susan has a problem with the walking on the back, although she again doesn't say anything, and she goes into the kitchen to make dinner. But during this time, she can constantly hear Mike moaning and Robin talking dirty. Well, it's not dirty, but it's played off.
They're just like it is. She's just walking on his back, helping his back out, but it sounds very much like sexual puns.
Yeah, and she's there like, oh yeah, like, should we try deeper? And he's like, oh yeah, go deeper. It's very weird.
It's really strange.
Susan ends up running back into the room in a panic and can see that Mike is just being a bit over dramatic about how good Robin's work feels. So Mike comes home with an injured back again, but Robin isn't here, so Susan offers to do it for him, and then Mike winds up in hospital. Don't know how, don't ask how, we can just assume it's Susan being clumsy Susan.
Well, we've got a track record of clumsy mishaps from Susan, so it was no surprise. Should we play the sting?
We should, yes.
That was the clumsy Susan sting for those that haven't heard that before.
So Susan goes to leave his room and MJ and Robin turn up. So MJ then goes in to see him and Susan tells Robin that she wanted to do it herself and then tells her the truth that she just didn't want Robin to do it. She didn't want to do it to Mike, but she also didn't want Robin to do it to Mike. So it was kind of a lose-lose for Susan.
Yeah.
She claims that she had a problem with Robin wearing next to nothing and straddling her husband and that she is going to react like this because Robin used to be a stripper. This seems to be the final straw for Robin, who clearly has a hard time hearing this from Susan, and she tells Susan to stop calling her that because she's sick of everyone seeing her that way, and until now Susan was the only one who didn't.
It's a real problem. I would have thought that they would have learnt better having Edie on the block for such a long time to see people as they are and not just look at how you view them.
Yeah, but they were never really that good friends with Edie, were they? Let's face it.
But they're acting like just because she was a stripper, that means that she's
a predator.
Some promiscuous predator. Yeah. Some man-eating, husband-stealing, home-wrecking
slag.
Yeah. So that would really upset me. And our previous comment of maybe she still has hurt feelings and she's still affected by how Carl cheated on her so long ago is never mentioned.
No, it's not. So I don't really think that was taken into consideration at all.
It was even never about that, and it was just that Robin used to be a stripper, which is awful.
Mm.
Or they missed an opportunity. I don't know. A bit rubbish.
I mean, I reckon it was both. I reckon that it was purely just about the fact that Robin is a stripper. But I do think the writers did miss an opportunity.
Yeah.
For this. Like, Robin apologises and basically says, you know, she's sorry if she crossed the line, and claiming that after working at the club for so long, maybe sort of the location of the line is blurry for her now. But Susan then claims she overreacted, and Robin tells her that she'll move out in order to save their friendship.
Yeah, which was very mature.
It was very mature, because if I was Robin, I'd be like, no, I don't want to be a friend.
Yeah, it would be a bit difficult, wouldn't it? It's like you're judging me because of my previous profession.
Mm.
And you're confusing it with another profession again.
Yeah.
They're acting like she was a sex worker. Even then, you shouldn't be judging the sex workers for their profession, because I mean, it's work.
Nowadays, she'd have an OnlyFans.
Yeah.
And she'd be raking it in. Robin pops by Catherine's to give her some mail, which seems to happen a lot because the mail ended up at Susan's. Catherine admits it's been hard coming back to a big empty house, so Robin floats the idea of her moving in, telling Catherine that she's looking for a room to rent and no one's going to judge the woman from a mental hospital when there's a stripper that's living with her.
Yeah, well, after what she's been through this episode,
yeah,
it's probably true.
Doesn't take long, and Robin is moving in with Catherine, and Robin wants to go out to celebrate, but Catherine isn't really sure she can handle that yet, so Robin asks what it was like to being in a mental hospital, and she isn't really up for answering that. So Robin gives little insight into her childhood, abusive mom, a dad who was constantly cheating, and then this is when Catherine tells her the truth about what it was like for her at the mental hospital, and then Robin cracks a funny one-liner and everyone laughs.
Yeah, so now on to Catherine's story.
Yeah.
It's quite a nice scene, seeing them just open up to each other. They both seem to have gone through a lot, especially with Catherine recently having gone through so much.
Yeah, and it was nice to hear a bit more about Robin
as
well, and like Robin's little history. So Catherine agrees that they should then go out. You know, she's like, oh, okay, maybe a night out would do me good. So they're now both at the bar, having a nice time, when a guy comes over and invites them to his table. However, Robin says it's girls' night out and politely declines, until Catherine tells her that she kind of wants to go over there because it's been a while since Amanda's flirted with her. They then head over there, but they only seem to be interested in Robin, and then Robin does try to veer the conversation towards Catherine, but they aren't having it, and Catherine is apparently starting her own catering business, it comes out in this episode.
Good for her.
In this scene. So, gonna get a little bit of competition with Brie?
Potentially.
Yes.
I did feel really bad for Catherine, though.
Of course so. Of course you would. Robin's getting all the attention. It was like at Catherine's party all over again.
I do like, you know, earlier she said that maybe her therapist says that she should go out more, but being at Gabby's alone was very draining for her.
Mm.
That was really relatable.
That is really relatable.
I feel like ever since the pandemic, just being in regular social situations is so draining.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. I'm absolutely knackered constantly.
And now Catherine's out and hoping that she gets flirted on and everyone's just flirting
with Robin. So the guys keep trying to guess what Robin does for a living, and Catherine snaps eventually and tells the guys that Robin is a stripper, and then corrects herself to say was a stripper, to which these guys react horribly to.
I wrote, so childish,
really creepy. They're like, why is that a problem? Yeah, we love strippers.
They're like angels of mercy that show their boobs.
Yeah, I know. What the
Jesus
fuck?
Ugh. It's almost like these men, their brains haven't developed ever since they were teenagers and their hormones started kicking in. Like, they peaked. That was it for them.
And that's what happens with most men, to be fair.
That's what TV shows, for sure. It's really off-putting.
Yeah. Robin and Catherine get up to leave, and the guys claim they aren't interested in Catherine because Robin is more their type. So Robin tells them she'll have Catherine all to herself and kisses her, which causes the guys' jaws to drop whilst they remember that moment for future wank material.
It's really bizarre. I know it's a trope of this kind of thing to happen, like the women kiss and the men are then just putty.
Yeah.
But the look on their faces, why can't men control themselves in these scenarios?
I don't know. So Catherine and Robin are back at home drinking and bitching about the guys, and Catherine tells Robin that she's giving up on men and will no longer be dating, and this is when Robin admits that she's a lesbian, and she kind of tries to get Catherine into the fold. And Catherine believes that she's barking up the right tree, she just doesn't want to bark anymore. And then Robin finishes her glass and heads upstairs, but checks with Catherine that she's okay with, you know, her preferences, to which Catherine doesn't have a problem.
Of course not, because Catherine is just fine with everything.
Yeah.
In this episode, like, anytime someone's like, this is this, or she's that, she's just like, and?
I don't imagine Catherine would have had a problem with it anyway.
No, of course not, but that's great. That's good about her.
Yeah.
But you know what? Giving up on men in this scenario, completely fair, because the men in this show, they're awful, they're horrendous, they're sewer gates.
Yeah.
And
don't blame her.
And it kind of includes queer men as well.
Oh, absolutely. We've seen Bob and Lee.
Yeah, we've seen Bob and Lee.
So we move to the end of the episode, and we end with Robin, who is going for a walk and bumps into Karen, who checks up on her and makes sure that no one is giving her grief about being a stripper. Karen gives her some history about her modelling days, and Robin tells her that people here actually see her, unlike at the club where people would just sort of look at her but not really register her as being anything but a dancing bag of flesh.
Yeah, it was really heartwarming.
It was.
She's like, they see me, they don't just look, they see.
Yeah, and it was nice of Karen to check on her as well. So she finishes up her conversation and Mary Alice chimes in, telling us what all the housewives saw when they looked at Robin. And Gabby saw her sense of morality, Susan saw her loyalty, Bree saw her insight, Lynette saw her forgiving nature, and Catherine saw her beauty, and she liked it.
Yeah, so that's brand new information for Catherine. Been waiting for that to come along for ages.
I know, it's very fitting that we've entered Pride Month and we get this storyline.
Yeah. So I'm really glad that Robin got her own story. I find that in episodes about certain people, they normally use the character as a jumping off point to talk about the main characters. Like, their stories are reactionary for the main characters.
Mm.
Like with Eli Scruggs or Edie. It's more about what Gabby and Susan and Lynette and Brie learned from them or how they affected their lives.
Yeah.
But this one seems quite a lot about Robin, more so.
Yeah, I mean, we do see what the women learn from Robin.
Yeah, and she affects them, like, when she influences Bree to try and reclaim her intimacy.
Yeah.
But a lot of it does seem about Robin's character a lot more so than in those previous episodes.
Yeah. So that is the episode.
That was the episode. So let's move on to our next segment where Joel's going to give the gayest and the straightest moments of the episode. So what do you have for gayest moment?
My award for gayest moment goes to Robin for trying to convince Catherine to become a lesbian.
It's pretty gay. I mean, they're pretty gay in this.
That's pretty gay. It's more than pretty gay to try and just get someone else in the fold.
I mean, there was also a queer kiss.
There was a queer kiss, which we love to see.
We love a quiz.
We love a quiz. We love a queer kiss. That was tough to say then.
And then what do you have for straightest moment?
My award for straightest moment goes to Parker's friends for clearly lying about having sex just to seem cool.
Yeah. God, there were so many picks for straightest moment. I didn't know how you were going to do it today.
I know, it was really tough in the end. God, who would your honorary mentions be?
Tom, the men at the bar, that'll do.
those are B's honorary mentions then. And now we move on to B's awards for best and worst parent. So who do you have for the best parent of the episode?
So my award for
best parent of the episode.
So there wasn't a lot of candidates up for consideration this episode.
Not really.
But I did give it to Lynette and Tom for their conversation with Parker about sex and also his self-image. It wasn't the most well-informed and it lacked any talk about people spying on others and the moral implications around that.
It was a good conversation for a completely different topic.
But it was nice that they didn't just shout at him or scold him. And there was some nice stuff about self-image. Not the best, but this is what we're working with, guys.
So who do you have for worst parent?
My award for
worst parent of the episode,
I gave this to Gabby for trying to manipulate Anna into breaking up with Danny.
Fair.
Using manipulation tactics to get what you want from a child who isn't in your care.
Wasn't a good look. It wasn't a good look, Gabby.
It was all terrible. So that was that was a really easy award.
Which makes a nice change, because for this season it's been quite difficult for you for your awards.
Well, best parent's normally quite difficult.
Well, it's just not been that much parenting, really.
So, that was season 6, episode 15. Lovely. Where can people find us online if they have any questions, queries, comments, and theories?
You can find us on Instagram at boyfriendsreview, and you can find us on Twitter at BFSReview.
Our email address is boyfriendsreview@outlook.com, and the artwork is done by Louis, who you can find on Instagram at DocRedMonkDesign, where there's a link to his Etsy page.
Yes. So before we close off the episode, we have shout-outs, which are a little bit old, but you know, we haven't checked the review, so apologies for that.
Shout-outs?
So, yeah, shout-out to Earl Pearl 222 or 222, who left us a lovely review.
Oh, reviews, yes.
Yeah. So do you two post in the Desperate Housewives subreddit? Anyhow, I discovered your show and I'm absolutely hooked. There's not much content out there about this iconic show and your series retrospective so far. Scratches all my Desperate Housewives needs. Can't wait until you make it to my favourite episode of the series, season 6, episode 20, Epiphany, because a lot of care went into that particular episode. So we'll have to keep an eye out for that one. That one is coming up and it is a very good episode as well.
Okay, well, we'll have to try and remember that when we do it and make sure we do that one justice for our kind reviewer.
Yes. And we have Lacey Chung as well, who left us a review to say, I've just finished my third rewatch of the entire Desperate Housewives series. I was so sad it was over. Instead of going back to episode 1 and starting over again, I searched for a podcast to give me the feeling of talking about the show with friends and found this fabulous one. Joel and Billy Way are hilarious and have made me laugh out loud several times while discussing all of the drama and sass that the ladies of Wisteria Lane display. ... I won't read out the rest of it, but thank you, Lacey.
We made them laugh.
We did make them laugh.
Oh, cool.
Yes. So thank you, Lacey, for that. There's also stuff on the Desperate Housewives subreddit, but I don't really get Reddit, so we don't have Reddit yet. But knowing that we've been mentioned on Reddit certainly makes me want to get it.
Thank you. Yeah, at the moment, we're kind of my friend Tia is sending us Reddit comments.
Yeah.
Just like, this has been said about you on Reddit, which I love.
It's lovely to know that even though we don't have a presence on something, we're being spoken about in like a positive light. It is really nice. So.
And listeners are repping for the podcast, just saying, you guys want Desperate Housewives content, which we're severely lacking for. Well, these guys are making a podcast. So yeah thanks for that.
And it's nice to know that my idea was well received.
Yeah.
Because I felt the same. That's why we started this podcast, because we watched Desperate Housewives, I introduced me to it, and then we fell into lockdown and I got into podcasts and found none. I found no Desperate Housewives podcast whatsoever. They did not, none existed at that time. So that's the reason that I created one, because I was also looking for one and couldn't find one.
Yeah, you wanted a Housewives podcast. I needed something creative to do.
Exactly.
That included my degree.
Exactly.
So you please do leave us a review on Apple Podcasts primarily, but anywhere else where you get your podcasts and that you're listening to us from.
Yeah.
We save the reviews. They are currently highlighted on our Instagram page under the highlights reel, babes.
Yeah.
And we will see you next time with Season 6, Episode 16, The Chase.
Yes.
See you then.
Bye, guys.
Bye.